This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles is brought to you by Wasp Archery, Vortex Optics, Code Blue Sense, and Reveal Trail Cameras. All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and it's not very often we have, I guess you would say, a musician or an artist on the podcast, but today we do. Mr. Rafe Carlson. Rafe, how are we doing? Good. Man,
how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Doing good. And we're recording this on Memorial Day, so if you hear my kids arguing or basketballs or baseballs being thrown against the side of the house and me potentially having to stop the podcast and go chew some ass, then that's a possibility. So
sounds like you got good kids, man. At least they're not inside playing video games or something. They're out having
exactly, exactly by force. Yeah, they're outside by force today. So, well, Rafe, tell me a little bit about yourself, high level, real quick. Where are you from? What do you do for a living?
Yeah, man, I'm from Hermantown, Minnesota, just northwest of Duluth, which is the far northern part of the state.
Right.
And I grew up hunting and fishing out in kind of middle of nowhere. You get north of Duluth and up toward like the boundary waters and stuff. And it's just pretty, it's God's country, just totally uninhabited. So
yeah,
just grew up, in the wilderness, untouched forests and stuff like that. I graduated high school in Hermantown and kind of did a little bit of college, started selling motorhomes and RVs and campers for a little while. And then I left that job at about 22 years old, 21, 22, with no plan other than I want to play music and I want to sing. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to figure out how to make it work. So I just kind of threw my hat over the fence, so to speak, and played my first show 2 weeks after I quit my job, flew to Nashville about a week after that. Started recording music, started writing songs with some buddies down there, and then moved down there eventually, started playing bigger shows, festivals, touring regionally, then somewhat, semi-nationally, and then we've just been doing it, growing steadily kind of ever since, 2021, 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Sounds awesome. So how, do you come from like a musical family? Did you come from like mom in the church choir or something like that?
Yeah. Well, my mom actually was in country bands in the 80s. Mm. So I'll always bring up Def Leppard or stuff like that. I miss the 80s. I was playing country music. So she doesn't even know, she wasn't even listening to the rock and roll and the stuff in the 80s because she was singing Merle Haggard and stuff. And so she was in a bunch of different, local bands around Duluth and northern Minnesota. And my dad doesn't have a musical bone in his body, but he's also from a super musical family. A lot of my aunts sing, a lot of my cousins sing. I grew up watching my cousins play guitar in rock and roll bands, and that was kind of what got me to buy an electric guitar. And so, it's funny because both sides of my family are musical, but in very, very different ways.
So it's in the blood, at least.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. Now, coming from a musical family, how old were you when you started playing guitar or writing music or singing? I mean, were you in bands in high school and middle school?
Yeah, I never even sang. I remember the first time I sang in front of my friends, I was probably 18 years old. And I was still super scared. It's like one of those things, singing for three people in a living room can be more nerve-wracking than 10,000 people on a festival stage or something. But I didn't even, most of my friends didn't even know I sang or played an instrument, play guitar, until the end of high school or after graduating. And so it was kind of you know, how long have you been doing this? I kind of just kept it secret. I played basketball. I played football up until beginning of high school. And I was in choir a little bit, but, you know, all my buddies played sports and I didn't want to be like the choir guy. So I kind of just didn't really prioritize music a lot in school. And I didn't start actually taking it seriously until after I quit my job years later. Which is super crazy to think about. But yeah, I you know, most people didn't even know I sang or anything until I was 18, 19 years old.
Okay. So if you ask my mom, she will tell you that I have a beautiful voice, but that's because she's my mom. Now, I don't think you could find another person that would agree with her, but like, how old were you when you found out maybe you have enough talent to potentially do something with it?
Dude, I mean, that's the question, because like, people will tell you what they think you want to hear a lot of times, especially your mom, like my mom. You know, I grew up singing in the car seat to Bon Jovi and Rascal Flatts and, you know, on road trips and stuff. She's like, you can sing. So I'm like 7 years old. And, you know, and then when I started singing for my friends, they're like, oh man, you can really sing. Like, this is incredible. And it's like, are you just saying that because you're my buddy? Or, you know, so you never really know until you start singing for strangers. And you don't start singing for strangers until you have a show or like you're playing some sort of public thing. So I mean, I still don't really know. You never really know if people are just telling you what you want to hear or if they're genuinely, you know, I mean, like we've gotten to a point now where I feel like at least some people think as a band, we're decent. So I don't know. I feel like I just try to do my best, trying not blow my voice out. I just can't. Literally last night was a night six or seven in a row of just like being on the road playing shows like 2-3 hours a night. So that's why my voice is kind of scratchy today, but we're just trying to keep my voice intact for the summer tour. But
yeah,
so, that's a good question. It's hard to tell,
but that's the thing, right? Like I heard the word Nashville in there. Cause was that like a leap of faith? Like a lot of people, cause I mean, me and my wife, we like to go to Nashville, and every Uber driver, every bartender, every person I've ever ran into and have had conversations there are going there to try to make it big, right? To try. And so it was a leap of faith. Is that something that you did when you went to Nashville?
Yeah, dude. And that's the craziest part of, you know, my whole journey since quitting my job, you know, over five years ago now. It's not been, you know, the recent stuff and the, you know, the social media stuff and playing these huge stages and going on tour with these big acts like that. That has been more just a result of time and hard work and having the right people in our corner. But the beginning of it was the craziest part because I had zero connections. Like, nothing going on. I'd only played two or three shows and I wound up getting hooked up with my good buddy, Jeff Huskins, who was, he's still a producer. He was a fiddle player in Little Texas. He was a fiddle player for Clint Black all through the 90s. And he's got, he's founded and sold record labels and written hit songs. He's been a part of the music industry since he was, I think he moved to Nashville. He was like 17 or 18.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he was in my corner from day one. That was probably my luckiest break was meeting him. And so I moved to, I went to Nashville with a plan as opposed to just kind of showing up in town. And, you know, I didn't have to cut my teeth in Nashville. I did it up in the Midwest. You know, I didn't have to go get a job as a busboy and play gigs on Broadway. I know I have a lot of friends that do that and they work their asses off all. And it's just like, I'm fortunate to have been able to do that up in my neck of the woods, up in Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think part of that at the beginning was just coming to town with a plan and having, you know, such a well-connected dude. He picked me up from the airport, showed me around, slept in his guest bedroom, you know. So we're still really good buddies to this day. He just produced the last single I put out. But yeah, man, those first like couple like leaps of faith, like you said, that's when it's most important to have someone in your corner like that, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to playing music, a lot of people do it for free. And then it sounds like you What was that first, like, hey, dude, I'll pay you to sing moment for you?
That's actually, for you. So the funny thing with that is that started when I lied when I said my first show was after I quit my job. My first actual show was after I quit my job. But like the day I gave my 2 weeks notice, I drove up to Two Harbors. I don't know if you know where that is. It's up the north shore of Lake Superior, probably 45 minutes outside of Duluth, 30, 40 minutes. Because I knew I wouldn't run into anyone I knew. I didn't want to get embarrassed. And I just went and stood on the pier that goes out into the Lake Superior where all the tourists kind of walk by. And I stood there with my guitar and played for 45 minutes probably and put a whey protein jug that I just finished out and I wrote tips on the side of it. And I played for like 45 minutes and I think I made like $50 in tips. And that was when I gave my 2 week notice. I was like, okay, I can make money like play music somehow, so I'll figure it out from here. And then my first show they paid me like $100 I think, and you gotta do stuff like that when you're starting out. You got no name, no reputation, you gotta start somewhere, you know.
Okay, so that's great. Like if you ask me, like, so when I started podcasting, right, I was in a weird spot because I took my leap of faith when I already had kids. Right. I couldn't just like quit my job and live in a van.
And then there's a lot more on the line, you know?
Yeah, exactly. but what about you? Like, were you just willing to live in a dumpster for however long it took? Or did you have a plan at all? Or were you just shooting from the hip?
Just shooting from the hip, man. You know, I worked 6 days a week, 12 hours a day sometimes selling RVs. Mm-hmm. So I was able to put away a little bit of money by the time I was, 21, 22. Didn't have a whole lot of expenses as a young guy, just, eating frozen pizzas and stuff. And, so I had a small nest egg kind of, and I was like, I can at least live off this for a few months while I figure things out. It was a short window, and I knew it would be tricky, but it was coming right into summer season. And I was like, okay, well, it's May 1st. I'm quitting my job. I know the money I have will last me X amount of time, but we're getting right into summer. And it was by probably June. I had shows, 2-3 nights a week. And I was like, okay, we're going to be fine. But it is a scary thing, especially like you said, if you got a wife and kids or a family, you got commitments, you got bills to pay. And I was just fortunate enough to be in a situation where I was young. I'd worked hard, put a little bit of money away.
Yeah.
And the cards kind of lined up,
Yeah. Yeah. So, but now I went to your website, right? And I'm looking at all your tour dates and you're just stacked all the way up until September. That's the last thing that I see. There's probably more, but what I'm getting at is when did it become, I'm just going to play music, and if I get paid $100, I'll take it, to like being on stage at these giant venues and concerts and things like that? And was there a moment where you're like, oh shit, it went from me quitting my job just to go chase my love of music to I might actually make some money off of this and have this be my life? Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/chronicles and use NFC25 for 25% off your first order. Trollco. For the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack Fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code NFC at checkout for 20% off on all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Dude, and the funniest thing, and this is what I didn't realize from the outside looking in before I started doing music for a living, and I think a lot of people don't, is like the ups and downs. Like, I came from sales, so ups and downs, I was used to, you know, extreme highs. You have months where you sell a bunch of motorhomes and months where you sell nothing, you know. So I was used to that, but the extreme highs and lows are even worse in the music industry, because yourself is attached to it. It's like, this is you and your brand. And so I've been on, you know, the stage in front of 5,000 people, and then two nights later in a bar playing to the bartender and one couple in the back. So it's like, it's not some steady thing where it's like, okay, then you play this show and then you play a bigger show and then you get a record deal and then it's this thing. I mean, it's you're doing this and this, ups and downs constantly, but there've been a handful of moments where I'm like, okay, it's like times where it's like, okay, the floor has raised. There's no going back to here. It's right. Like the bottom has gone up, you know, and it's like, I think our first big show was we opened for Jake Owen and Tyler Rich at Country Jam up in Bayfront Festival Park in Duluth. And that was probably our first decent sized gig. We made a whole bunch of merch. We had a bunch of friends and family. They're all wearing our t-shirts, and it was just my cousin and I at the time. I didn't even have a band. And I was like, okay. At that moment, I was like, I'm never playing bar shows again. It's this and bigger from here on out. And I was totally wrong. You know, it's just like constant ups and downs. But the problem with that, like you said, you know, playing a gig for $100 versus doing the real big stuff, you kind of have to, like, if you love playing music like I do, you have to surround yourself with a team that's going to be the person to say, no, we're not taking this gig. Is I'll just say yes to everything. I'm just like, man, I love to play, you know. So you have to have someone that drives the hard bargain and says, you know, here's our value, here's the fan base we've built, here's the brand, people are going to come to this show, no, we're not taking this, you know. And I can't be the one to do that.
I mean, that makes sense, because, you know, like, whoever the big, like, Jelly Roll isn't going to go play a bar for the bartender and a couple in the back for $100 anymore, right? It's not the value of the event. It's the value of the artist.
And he's the kind of guy who probably would, but his tour will not let it fly, you know?
Exactly. Okay. So that's cool. And now it sounds like you're rolling.
Yeah, man, this summer is for sure, like, by far our biggest summer. We kind of do the summertime tour thing where I'm in Nashville in the wintertime, get back here about May, and then we go through the end of September. And man, this year is like every weekend we're either out with, you know, direct support for national acts, or we're headlining like small town fairs and festivals, or we're on the bills for these huge festivals like Hoofbeat and Windstock and Lakes Jam. And it's like two or three, sometimes four of these a week where we're just on the road. I'm going to pick up a actual band van potentially tomorrow. So it's, everything's happening really fast, especially this album coming out too and all this stuff. It's like trying to surround myself with people at the same time that can kind of take on some of these responsibilities as we get into it. Because once you get on the road, it's just like, you're just going. Like I'll have like a week where I'm like, oh shoot, I didn't text this person back and we were supposed to do something yesterday and I totally forgot about it. Cause like, you know, without someone to kind of manage your whole thing, it's tricky to be on the road like that.
Yeah, that's a fact. All right. When you started out, I don't know, did you do what most people do and they play cover songs, or did you go right into your own stuff?
Dude, I am a huge fan of cover songs. That's all I did. I didn't even want to, like, when I started writing, I didn't even want to write. I was like, can't I just sing Bob Seger and Chris Stapleton all night? And I don't even, like, what am I going to, you know, I'm not a songwriter. I've never written songs. And then it's just one of those things where you do it and then you get hooked, and then you start, you have your first like banger where you're like, I can't even believe I wrote that song. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when it clicks. You get a couple of those under your belt and then you get hooked. So, but yeah, no, we still play covers even with the band. Like we'll throw in a few covers in the set, but I still like to mix it up as much as I can, do originals and covers. But what we found is like starting out, you're trying to play originals that you wrote and people are like, play 5 o'clock somewhere, play, you know, play Friends in Low Places. And it's finally getting to the point where it's like, we're in the middle of playing like, you know, some Luke Combs song and somebody comes up and like, you know, play Northbound. Like they're requesting our songs, which is cool. It's kind of turned a little bit this last year. So that's been fun to see.
And it seems like you've kind of fallen into somewhat of a niche, right? Like that Northern Midwest, UP, Northern Minnesota. I mean, that's the vibe that you are trying to create. Like, it's not pure country what you're doing. It seems like there's a lot of rock and roll influence in it.
Yeah. It's hard to even call a lot of the stuff that, I mean, especially if you come out to a show, it's like we're putting on a rock show and, calling it country a lot of times, but it's kind of walking a fine line. Cause if you go too far into the rock world, like we're not trying to sound like the stuff that's on rock radio, but I remember the exact moment. Like I was sitting in Nashville and I just finished writing a song. I can't remember who with, but I was like, man, like this is a great song. I love the song. I love the hook. I love all these things about it. I would never sing it. It has nothing to do with my life. It doesn't sound like who I am as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know who you are when you just fly to Nashville, start writing songs. It's like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do? Try to sound like the stuff that's on the radio? Well, the stuff that's on the radio sounds like you grew up in Kentucky, and I didn't. I grew up in Northern Minnesota. So I grew up listening to, you know, Bob Seger, Skinner, Allman Brothers, ZZ Top. But I also grew up listening to like Eric Church, you know, Stapleton when I was a teenager and stuff like that. So we're just trying to make like the most honest sounding thing we can. And it's like the ironic thing is that it sounds like Southern rock, but it's from the North. But that's just like, you know, when it's negative 20 degrees all the time, it's hard to, you know, kick back and listen to Friends in Low Places. It's like people are tough and rough around the edges. And, you know, you get a tougher sounding music and it doesn't feel like something we have to force. That's just the kind of music that I've grown up listening to and enjoying and feels most natural to make, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you like what you like, right? And it is what it is. I think the fastest way to turn people off is to go fake and be fake about who you are. I mean, that could be with any profession. Or like if I came out here every day and was talking about, you know, killing giant deer every single day, people would find that out real quick that I don't kill giant deer every single year. You know what I mean? Like, but, which kind of leads me to my next question is like, how much is the outdoors and you being from the North Woods that is heavily influenced by hunting and fishing infused into your music?
Yeah, that's a good question, because if you had asked me that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, would have been a very different answer, because I was just trying to chase that Nashville thing. I was trying to chase that radio thing, you know, which we're still, I mean, we got songs on rotation right now in Northern Minnesota and Northern Wisconsin on radio stations, just because this album's coming out, which I'm super thankful for. But again, it's like, it sounds like how we all grew up, like me and my band, which is, you know, the title of the album is Out of the Woods. Every song on it, half of them, you know, I came up, I'm sitting in my deer stand, I came up with a cool line that I thought and I wrote it down in my notes or something, or, you know, out fishing. It's just like inspired by moments like that, like real authentic things, as opposed to like three guys sitting in a room like, all right, what do we write about today? Like that's how songs come together, but that's not where I find my like inspiration. Like a lot of the songs on this album, like I came up with the idea while out in the woods, or like, you know, sitting on a boat fishing, watching the sunset, or sitting on my deer stand and wrote it down. And I'm like, you know what? Like, here's a buddy of mine that I think would think this is cool. And then you go sit down with someone and you finish the song. But yeah. a few on the side of my road, on my own too, which is kind of unheard of in Nashville. But yeah, dude, all the songs, you know, Dirt Road to Heaven, Out of the Woods, Down the Road, Up to No Damn Good. Like this all, it's all about, you know, getting off the grid, growing up in the woods, being out in the middle of God's country, you know, and a lot of just like, you know, can't tell me nothing, don't tell me what to do, I'm out on my own and I like it type of thing. So that's kind of the general vibe of the album. And I think, like I said, if you had asked me that question 2 years ago, it would have been different. And that's kind of just the lane that we've locked into moving forward here, at least with this project.
Is this your first album you're putting out?
First album, yep. Debut album.
Okay.
Which is exciting. And it's not like, I've got all these songs I've written that sound like, that I'm super proud of and I really want to put out at some point. But I was like, also got these songs that are way more rock and roll, sound like where I grew up. And it's kind of like a cohesive thing. And I'm like, I can see where things are going. Like we're starting to talk with labels and this and that. And I'm like, I might not have a chance to put out this again. So I'm just going to put it out, you know, leading into the summer tour. People are going to love it. Some people are not going to love it. But I think like now is the time, especially to just establish that brand and that sound. I think that there's not a whole lot of other people doing, you know?
Yeah. I've had some pretty good conversations with some people in, out of Nashville. Have you ever heard of a guy named Hawking Horse?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, he tried to live like that. He's a writer and artist out of Nashville, but he's got a niche too. And his niche is like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like old time trapper / like settlers music from the 1800s. And so he went in for a while and he didn't really, he had success. But on an individual standpoint, he found like a niche of doing that type of music and it just took off for him. And he's like, I didn't know there were that many people like me out there who enjoyed this type of theme and this type of music. And it helps. I mean, it is what it is. And he's found it.
I gotta look him up. What was his name?
Hawking Horse.
That sounds cool, man. And that's how you build like super fans, is like people.
Exactly.
You're not trying to be like the McDonald's or like the Walmart, or, you know, just trying to like have everyone kind of not hate it. You wind up with people that hate it and don't understand it. And then you wind up with people, they're like, this speaks exactly to me. And those are the people that will come to the show and buy the t-shirt, be your best friend, you know?
Yeah. I have a friend who I do another podcast with, and his stepdaughter is also living in Nashville and is also in the process of touring and things like that. And she's just starting out. She does a lot of her own writing and stuff like that. But that kind of a, like, how, when you start like a record deal and you, or not even a record deal, or when you start to have like conversations with record labels, or you, cause you mentioned like, I don't know when I would ever put this out moving forward, so I'm going to put it out now. Yeah. Like when you start having these conversations, does the quote unquote industry say to you, here's the type of music we think you should play?
A lot of times, you know, but it's changed so much. I mean, I feel like in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, it was like, everything was that way. It was like, okay, well you get roped into this deal, sign your name on the dotted line, and then you're making music that sounds like they play at a JCPenney's while you're shopping. You know, it's like that's kind of the pipeline. But there's so many different like small indie labels popping up now, or like imprint labels under the big labels that have like a team that is dedicated to you and they care about your sound and they're like, this is cool. Here's how we can market this. Here's how we can make it a thing. And they actually take the time to develop you into like, you know, there's artists like... I don't know if you've listened to Steven Wilson Jr., first thing that comes to mind for me, but he's like, they're playing his stuff on the radio. He is so his own thing. It's just like, you have to have the right team and really like the right person to go to bat for you in town to be like, hey, this is cool. Listen to this. This is cool. Listen to this. Let's not try to change it too much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the industry is evolving in that sense in a good way, to where you're getting these more niche things. You know, with the internet, you can find anything you want. So I think they're kind of finally adapting to that and being like, okay, well, we can find an audience for this. It might not be like mega, mega, mega mainstream, but it's proof of concept in this thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So on your album cover, I think it's your album cover, you have a 1980s snowmobile.
Yeah, liquefier.
Yeah. So my uncle used to be a big time wrencher he used to wrench on snowmobiles back in his early days. And I can remember he would modify them. And dude, we would go so fast. I don't even know how fast we were going. I can remember one time I had a snowmobile suit on when I was a kid. I was holding on to him, and the wind from how fast we were going caught my hood and pulled me right off of the snowmobile in this field. Luckily there was snow and I kind of just glided off the back of it. But do you have any songs about snowmobiling?
No, I would love to do I don't. That's a great idea. I'm taking a mental note, but yeah, dude, that sounds like a blast. You scoop one of them things up and you can go real. This, it gets dangerous, dude. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh yeah, absolutely. It probably was not any type of legal. What he had put together.
Probably not.
What about you talk a little bit about the sitting in a tree stand? What is it about sitting in a tree stand and or being on the boat out on a lake that gives you that inspiration?
Dude, a huge part of it is just the places that we go to do that kind of stuff has no cell service. So I'm obviously I've been doing music for full time for over 5 years now. So I'm just always my business is on my phone. So all my friends get mad at me. They're like, oh, you know, I'm standing everyone's trying to hang out and I'm taking phone calls and texting people and doing all this stuff.
Yep.
Which, you know, I think Ed Sheeran or someone, he's like, yeah, I just have a flip phone. But my manager tells me where I need to be. So that's the goal someday.
Yeah.
But when you build it from the ground up, you got to always just be on the clock. And I think something about being out in the woods where it's like, oh, I need to call this person back, or I need to send this email. Mm-hmm. And it's like you open your phone and you got the SOS symbol in the top. And it's like, oh, I can't. Well, sun's shining. And then just kind of forces you into the present, which before doing the music thing, I was fine with that being out in the woods all the time. But now it's just like, I get so little of that being so locked into running this music business that, I just really appreciate those moments. I forced myself to just stay at the deer camp for a week with no service and just sit in the stand and zero distractions. And that's when the best ideas come, you know. We're out on the lake. We got a fishing shack way up north, near the Boundary Waters, that my dad, my uncles, you literally have to cross rail. I wrote a song about it called Dirt Road to Heaven, but you got to cross, you got to tow a boat, a little fishing boat, and a side-by-side or a four-wheeler or six-wheeler or something. And you drive across this unmaintained, rocky road to get to the side of it, hook the boat up to the wheeler, take that where you can't drive the truck anymore, cross these railroad tracks, wind up at a landing on a lake, unhook the boat, take the boat all the way across the lake to the cabin. And I think when they built it, it was the only cabin on the lake. Now there's two other ones, but there's no service. It's in the middle of nowhere. And so that's one of those things. It's just remembering why you do it. And sometimes you have to just be off the internet and out of cell service to get that kind of inspiration.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, man, I'm kind of in the same as a business owner myself. There's times where I really enjoy going to my river bottom ground, here in Iowa, because there's no cell service, and it's almost like you're on your phone so much and you're connected so much that when the time comes where you can't even connect, you don't even know what to do. And it takes 30 minutes or something for you to just like shift into nature. It's like, why am I in this tree stand? I don't even know why. Okay, I'm deer hunting. I can't scroll anymore. I can't text or send emails. I got to just pocket it. And then it's almost like this giant stress ball leaves your body.
Yeah. But it's scary though, if you think about it. Like that it takes that long to reset. Like I don't feel like I was that way when I was 12. You know what I mean? Like I feel like we turn into these cyborgs where we're just always like everything's happening here and not like in your body and in the world and like actually you're not really alive. You're just like intaking information and, you know, exporting information on your computer phone all the time. I don't know if that, like, personally, I don't really want to live that way, but
no,
I don't teach their own, but.
All right. I've had conversations with like, with NFL players before or college football players or athletes, let's say, who their sport is in the fall where they have to train in the fall and they don't get a duck hunt or deer hunt or fish as much because they've made the decision. Like, I'd love to go hunting, but I have a game this, you know, since you've gotten to the point where you're kind of full-time musician, do you always make time for deer camp or the hunting seasons, or do you have to put priority first and skip on those sometimes?
I've been able to make time. That's kind of like the one non-negotiable thing in my family. We hunt with like all my uncles and my cousins and a couple family. We got like 14 guys. So we all stay in a shack with just a bunch of bunks in the middle of nowhere. And that's like the one non-negotiable thing. It's like you don't miss deer camp. So I've been able to kind of just out of necessity, scared of getting chewed out if I miss it. But I was born on Halloween. So my deer opener in Minnesota is the first Saturday after the first Thursday. And I think that year, which was 1998, I think it was like, you know, November 2nd or something. So like he came to the hospital. He's like, okay, my baby's alive. See you later. And I think he shot a buck that year too. But that's just how important it is to us. And I feel like it's one of those things, like the importance of just having a family tradition.
Oh, yeah.
Even like, I love shooting bucks. But even just the tradition of it and it's something that I think it's so important to hang on to and pass down to your kids. I feel like we're losing that a little bit in a lot of ways.
That's
I think it's important to have something. So I've always made time. Like one thing is I always miss fishing trips. Like I always miss stuff in the summer because we're just going nonstop. So if we're last summer was the first time I didn't make it up to our fishing shack since I was born. I was up there in a, you know, little baby holder thing when I was like a year old, less than a year old. So I miss a lot of stuff in the summer. I mean, it sucks. I miss friends' weddings. I miss family weddings. I miss, you know, engagement parties, everything that people schedule on a weekend. I'm not there, which really sucks. But, no, I don't miss deer hunting ever.
Yeah. And that's, I love that non-negotiable, point of view. Okay. So as you, let me ask you this question. Share with us, it's not a question, a comment. Share with us one of your favorite hunting stories or memories from your past.
Yeah, man. Shoot. Oh, there was one day, 2020. I think it was 2019 or 2020. Yeah. Opening day of deer hunting in Minnesota. So we hunt kind of around Moose Lake. I don't know if you know where that's at. It's kind of close to halfway between Duluth and Minneapolis.
Okay.
And beautiful day. I mean, like, I grew up hunting way north of Duluth where it's like opening day could be 0 degrees. It could be below zero, snowing, freezing wind, you know.
Yeah.
Beautiful day. It was like 60 degrees, sunny.
Yeah.
I remember I have a picture I still saved on my phone. That morning, as soon as the sun came out, like I took off my coveralls and then my jacket underneath and my sweatshirt. And then I was just like shirtless on my stand, like sunbathing basically, which we don't really get to do a whole lot of that up where I'm from. So it was kind of nice. But then the deer aren't really moving when it's that hot out sometimes. So we were kind of like, shoot, it'll be a nice sit, but we probably won't get anything. And all of a sudden, just boom, like it had to be like, we hunt relatively close together and it sounded like whoever shot was probably pointing right toward me because it sounded like a cannon. And then all of a sudden, like 20 minutes later, another one. And then, buck walks out right in front of me. Boom. And we all, so I'm like getting ready to drag it out. And my two cousins come out that had just shot. So we get that one loaded up on the side by side, get back to camp. And there's two bucks laying there by the meat pole. And they got a fire going already. A couple beers cracked. It's like 10 AM at this point, I think. So
right.
Opening day. And we're all getting situated. And then there's another shot. Boom. Like the closest stand to our shack. And we all go out there and pull that one out. And by this point, like everyone else in the woods is like, what is going on around here? Like we've had good opening days. But I think that year that was all we shot was those four bucks on opening day. But the cool part of that for me was just, being able to kind of share that moment. It was me and three of my cousins.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, our uncles being the seasoned hunters, they usually outdo us and get the first buck or get the nicest buck or whatever it is. So we kind of had a little day where we got to brag a little bit and we were like, you know, we had a good opening day, but I don't know. That was the first thing I thought of when you asked that. It was just a fun kind of memory with my cousins, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And that's where like, for me, I mostly bow hunt. Okay. And so a lot of what I do is very independent.
Right. There's not yeah, like, it's a I don't, different, whole I, different thing.
Yeah. I don't do a deer camp per se. It's not until recently I haven't involved my kids, but in the past 2 years, I've started involving my kids more into my hunting. My daughter's killed a turkey. My son shot his first deer this past season. And so nice. I'm starting to get into that tradition type of part of my hunting career, but I'm to the point now where like I want that camp, or I want that connection with other people or family or things like that, where I don't, you know, I like big bucks, don't get me wrong, it's cool to kill a big deer, but at the same time I also want to spend as much possible time with my kids or my family out in the great outdoors, whether that's fishing or hunting, as I possibly can. And that's yeah. where like the memory aspect of all this is starting to become more important to me.
Well, now it's gotta be such a cool moment as a dad when you're yeah. when oh, your yeah. kid shoots their first turkey or their first deer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you gotta have something that, like we were saying earlier, it's like, I feel like you need, whether it's family or friends or both, or just something where some kind of tradition that's just a non-negotiable thing. It's like, hey, we're going, you know, get dressed. You're waking up at 5 a.m., you know,
yep.
getting up to the stand.
Yep.
But that's cool, man. Yeah. Yep. So you hunt in Iowa then?
Iowa. I chase mule deer and elk out west.
Sweet.
Almost every year. I just had a total knee replacement. So this year I'm just hunting Iowa, and then hopefully by next year I'll be back, somewhat fully recovered and get back out and chase the Western species again. But yeah, dude, it's so much fun.
That's cool.
Okay. So outside of, you know, you have this new album coming out. Talk to me a little bit about what it takes to put an entire album to, not just a couple songs and writing the individual songs, but putting an entire album together.
Yeah. Well, this one is kind of, it's a standalone thing in the sense that I didn't go into it. Like I wasn't recording the first songs with the intention of putting an album together.
Yeah.
But what I realized was like the songs I was writing and recording when I started out were very, you know, neutral, very safe, very like just mm-hmm. sounded like everything else. And 2024, I think, rolled around and I put out a song called Big City Lights. People loved it. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. But I was like, this is the most, you know, me sounding thing I've done yet. Mm-hmm. So I started kind of experimenting with like putting out more songs like that. And then I got to, you know, the end of last year and I was like, well, shoot, I got four of these songs out and I got probably another four or five on deck that sound like this thing. I've also got hundreds of other songs I've written and I could put all these together and just make an album out of, you know, really good songs, or I could take this kind of thing I've been trying out and compile it into one sound. And so it's not a traditional album in the sense of like, here's your 12 songs, here's your slow song, here's your upbeat song, here's your mid-tempo song, here's the single we pitched to radio, here's this other thing. It's kind of just like a cohesive compilation of like this kind of Northwoods Southern rock and roll sound. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to, I didn't even want to put it out as an album. I wanted to just do it as like an EP because I was like a little nervous of that debut album moment. Cause like you want to have, you know, a lot of record labels want to have your debut album moment. And I was like, I'm going to put this out independently. So I'm just going to do a EP. My buddy John, I've been working with, he's kind of getting rolling like an artist development label services arm of the agency I'm signed with. He was like, dude, making an album. I was like, all right. So he's been helping me with the rollout and the album release. Yeah. But I was like, well, shoot, this is real now. So then it kind of clicked. I was like, okay, debut album. What are the songs you would put on your debut album? So it's kind of like a statement thing. Like all of my favorite artists, when I look back, I'm like, okay, here's their debut album. Like I'm a big fan of like, you know, like Korn. Like if you're into like rock and like metal and stuff, Korn's debut album is like, it's such a thing, and like there's nothing else like, or there was nothing like it at the time. Or like Chris Stapleton's debut album, completely unique. So I just wanted that kind of thing that some people are going to love, some people are going to hate, but will stand the test of time. That's kind of the goal with this, for sure. And just calling it Out of the Woods too, just like, I feel like in a lot of ways makes sense because it's like, you know, I grew up in the woods. It's like kind of coming out of the woods, like, here I am, this is what I sound like, you know. And then obviously being the title track, Out of the Woods, which comes out Friday, which is kind of a fun little tongue-in-cheek song. But man, I'm excited. It's just also a part of the album too, I think, which I haven't really talked about, or we haven't really like touched on leading up to it. It's like, it's not like super serious. Like it doesn't sound, when you listen to it, it doesn't sound like it's an album that's like taking itself super seriously. It's just like, it's just rock and roll, you know. I feel like that's something we've lost over time.
Oh hell yeah.
Like AC/DC, you know, AC/DC wasn't trying to like invent new chords and get like mystical and psychedelic. It's just like, here's what we sound like, you know. So that was kind of the goal with this.
Awesome, man. Are you excited for Friday?
Dude, I'm so pumped. We got a tour kickoff party / album release. South of Superior, Wisconsin. So we got radio ads running all over the Northland for that show. We got, you know, expecting a few hundred people. I got a few bands warming up. It's going to be a huge, huge party outdoors. Weather's looking perfect, like 80 degrees and sunny. So fingers crossed. You know, you never know, especially up here in the summertime, you could get some pretty whack weather. But yeah, we're hoping it'll be fun.
Yeah, for sure. So one of my favorite things to do is read my reviews, but not the good ones, like the negative ones, where it's like Dan Johnson is a douchebag type of, you know. So how do you react? Like, or what would your reaction be if someone was like, Rafe Carlson's new album sounds like ass, man?
Like, dude, that's how do you- awesome. Because there's no other dude. If you, for real, I've got, so in the past, like, three weeks or something, I've had a few videos hit on Instagram and Facebook. So we've gotten like 10 or 15 million views in the past 3 weeks. Yeah. And when you have that many eyes on something, you're going to get dozens, if not hundreds of negative hate. Just even if there's nothing to fight about, people will just make up something. It's the internet, you know?
Yeah. Right.
But when you post something on Facebook and it's all the, your family and the moms and stuff, it's like, oh, you're doing so well. That's how you know that you're not reaching anyone. It's just like, I obviously appreciate all those comments, super appreciate it. But it's when those hate comments start rolling in, or the negative album reviews, or people talking bad about it. It's like, okay, finally something's working. People are seeing this thing. It's engaging people in conversation. And that's the kind of stuff that people engage with online anyways. Like if someone sees a review and it's like, you need to listen to Rafe Carlson's new album. It's so good. Yeah. Most you can scroll right past it. But if you if you see some kind of headline that's like, man, this sucks. You know, oh, wow, drama, you know.
Yeah.
So
let me take a look at this. Yeah.
I would be honored to have some negative reviews of this record. I hope they'll start rolling in.
Well, that's awesome, man. And so what does this mean? What does this mean for your like career where, I don't know, like you're putting out your very first ever album?
Like, yeah.
You said you're excited about it, but what are you hoping happens with this release?
That's a good question, man. You know, I feel like I believe in the songs. I love the songs in this album. In terms of like getting something to radio and getting something to chart and go number one and that whole thing, that is obviously always the goal. But with it, yeah, it's not at the forefront. I think like we talked about is like creating something that people can go back to and be like, oh, you know, but his debut was the best because he still was doing this thing. He still sounded like this. Just, It's not, I'm not trying to be all artsy and everything, but I'm just trying to establish a sound, like a baseline.
Yeah.
And, You know, I think that's the goal. Like, I don't have a billion followers right now. You know, I've only been doing this for 5 years. But if I can make something that people can, you know, become a fan a year or two or five or 10 from now, and then go back to and be like, oh, this was the best, or this was at least like a thing at the time, like a time and place type thing. You know, like,
yeah,
especially a comment we get a lot because we do the live, we're touring all the time, and we're kind of like a live band as opposed to like a TikTok band or whatever.
Yeah.
We're out on the road all the time. And a comment we get all the time is like, man, this is just like, it's refreshing to hear this kind of like, the twin guitars, like the, you know, just the unapologetic, like rock and roll thing. Like, I don't think that brand of rock and roll exists in mainstream rock right now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist in country either. But it's kind of more of like what was coming out of like Jacksonville, Florida in the 70s, you know, like,
oh yeah,
for the sure. Skinner and Allman. Again, we're not even close to those guys, but just trying to emulate that a little bit and, not bring back a sound that no one's making anymore, but kind of just like allow people to listen to something while they're out on the boat or, you know, ripping some side-by-sides out in summertime in the North Woods or wherever you're at, and just be like, yeah, this is a, you know, I don't have to like dig super deep into this album or these songs. It's just fun. It's just rock and roll. It's just, I feel like that's refreshing for some people. So that's a goal too, is just make something that people can listen to from start to finish and be like, okay, that's a thing. And it's just fun to listen to.
All right. You've been touring for however long now. Share with us a memory, crazy, calm, however you want to do it, of like your favorite show you've ever done or the best show you've ever done.
Oh man. Well, the best show we've ever played as a band was at a county fair for about 5 people on a huge stage with like huge production. And I don't know what was in the air that night. We just kicked ass. We did so good. And we were like, well, it's like you 5 people got the best that we could possibly give tonight. And it's just funny how that works. I don't know if it's because we, you know, weren't in our heads or whatever it was, but, yeah, there's all kinds of crazy, crazy stories. Like, this one time, I won't say who we were opening for, but it was one of our first, like, might have been our first big. It was our first big show as a band, probably 5,000-6,000 people opening for a major act, and they were upset that we brought a cooler full of beer backstage. You know, we're like brand new, we don't know what we're doing, and you know, they had a rider that said, you know, no beer backstage, which obviously we got tour riders now, so I can respect that. But at the time, you know, the venue staff didn't say anything about it, so we're just like, well, okay. So they're like, okay, you need to move this out of the backstage area. So then we brought it up out of the backstage area into the crowd, and then the cops came over and they're like, you can't have this in the crowd, you need to bring this backstage. So we're like stuck with this cooler full of beer. And there, and it was just after we got off stage. So there's like people out in the crowd, like seeing it happen, taking pictures of us, people like coming, lining up to like come see what's going on and talk to us. And we're like getting chewed out by the cops over here and then by the venue over here. So we ended up getting kicked out of our own show. my guitar player said some things he probably shouldn't have. And that was, and then so we went and drank a bunch of beer. Someone ended up sleeping on the side of the highway. It was a interesting night.
It was a rock and roll night.
I can go into.
Yeah, it was a rock and roll type kind of night.
It was a rock, and you got to learn the hard way sometimes. I mean,
yeah.
Now we know how to, you know, and again, we probably didn't conduct ourselves how we should have, but now we know how to handle ourselves backstage. That was our first, I think that was our first show opening for like.
So you didn't even play?
No, we played. It was right after we got off stage, and I'm like walking off stage. Usually, you know, I'm like, okay, I got to go do a meet and greet or something. There's people,
yeah,
go sell some merch, take some pictures. And I don't even make it to the bottom of the stairs in the back of the stage, and I'm getting yelled at. I'm like, what's going on? I don't even know. I wasn't like drinking beers or whatever. So it's all about, people get bent out of hip about beer sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah.
we just like to enjoy it from time to time.
Have a little bit of beers. Have a couple beers. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Well, cool, man. Well, what's the name of this album?
Out of the Woods. Comes out on Friday.
Out of the Woods.
Yeah.
And so if someone's listening to this and they want to go find it, where is it going to be released at?
Everywhere. So on probably streaming platforms I don't even know about it, but for sure Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, YouTube, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're doing, you know, right now, depending on when you're listening, whoever, I mean, it comes out in 3-4 days, but whoever's listening, we're giving away tickets to see us with Bailey Zimmerman, Tucker Wetmore at Lakes Jam. 3-day tickets to that. We're giving away 3-day tickets to, or 2-day tickets to Winstock, which is down in Winstead, Minnesota, probably not too far from where you're at, a few hours. That's us with Dirk Spentley and Luke Bryan. We're doing a whole bunch of merch giveaways and stuff for people that pre-save the album. So, like I said, depending on when you're listening, you can go on my website or Instagram, Facebook, whatever, and you can hit the pre-save link and pre-save it to whatever streaming thing you use. But
yeah, well, cool, man. Yeah. I noticed that a lot of your venues are near lakes, especially if you're in Minnesota or Wisconsin. Yeah. So I hope you get the opportunity to get out and rip some lips this summer you're not performing. So
yeah, I hope so. I haven't really like spent enough time fishing or doing anything on the lake for a couple summers now, just because of how busy we've been. But we intentionally were like, okay, we'll play this festival, we'll play this show or whatever, because these people at the venue have a boat and we're going to go out fishing before the show and then come sound check and play and stuff like that. You know, we're playing on Lake Minnetonka opening for Gary LeBox from Rascal Flats and George Burge.
Yeah.
And the people that run that are like taking us out on the boat, like after we sound check before we play. So we walk off the boat, jump right on stage.
Hell yeah, dude. That'd be sweet. Rip some walleyes and then head back in and eat them afterwards. So
hell yeah, dude. That's what we do.
Well, cool, man. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate your time. I hope the album release goes well. And I hope you also find time to get outside and enjoy Mother Nature and disconnect find some more of that inspiration. So, man, I really appreciate you taking time today to do this.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. Real appreciate it.